Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast, the most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight, this is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy, it's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us, we don't do interviews, we do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill, we drink, we play games, we have the song of the week, we have the creative curse word of the week, as long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm gonna go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
Hey, welcome to the party, pal. This is New Shifted Steer, and on today's show, we're going to talk about, we're coming into a holiday weekend, the Indy 500. We're going to talk about Aaron was out overlanding, and we're going to talk about the world's most expensive new car. But Matt, I think you've got some sponsors to talk about.
Sure.
GEICO?
Yeah, let's talk about Geico. Talk about owning your home or renting your home and how much work it can be. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And we all know that's a good thing because you have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. And our friends at Meguiar's. You know, over the last few years, Meguiar's has launched the next generation of protective products specifically geared toward DIYers. Looking at you, Aaron.
What?
I'm not
a DIYer.
Aaron likes to do it himself.
I'm a DIYer.
Is that what DIY is? I thought it was do it yellow.
Do it yellow? Oh, yeah. That would be terrible. I don't really like yellow cars. But regardless of the color of your ugly car, here you go. They have their new hybrid ceramic line of products. They have the hybrid ceramic spray wax. This is the one we talked about in the bright blue bottle. It's got their advanced SiO2 hybrid technology, delivers ceramic wax protection and durability beyond traditional wax. They also have a liquid wax version, the hybrid ceramic liquid wax. Again, that long-lasting protection, but in an easy-to-use liquid wax. Of course, they have the spray detailer. This is the easy one, right, that we all like. Get that boosted shine in between the full wax, removes dust, fingerprints, bird droppings. It's the hybrid ceramic spray detailer. And then still the one I haven't had a chance to try yet is the hybrid ceramic wash and wax. I just don't have like a hose hookup here, so I got to find a, maybe we'll bring it to my own.
I was thinking about that the other day when I was washing a couple cars that I should get some of that.
You got to try it out. So it's the two-part system, all in one bucket, washes the vehicle, and then adds a little added layer of protection, which I want you to try it and let us know, like, does it have kind of a, like a wax, like a feel to it or, you know, but it seems to be good. It seems to work really well. So people seem to really like it. So I can't wait to
get
that.
Some today.
I needed some I had, when I walked out to my truck this morning, I had more than bird droppings. I had, looked like it was bird buckshot. I think a whole group flew over and like just went, brrr. Yeah, I mean, it was everywhere.
Oh, that Mexican food's coming back. Coming back from that bird.
Just wait till the fall with blackberry season, man. You get all those blackberry foods all over the cars.
That and the and the stuff off my palm trees. Those, the crows eat those. And man, yeah. Everywhere. Yeah, you're right.
At one of the houses I lived at in the canyon, we had an owl that lived on the property. And once in a while, I'd walk out and be like, what the hell? There's like four mice, you know, scattered in millions of bones all over my hood.
Oh, it's gross. All right. Well, get this free detailer. That'll help. Anyway, Meguiar's has a ceramic solution for everyone. It's ceramic made easy. It's Meguiar's.
Shift and Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjor, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
All right.
Hey, we're starting out. Right now, we are going into a holiday weekend as we record this. It's Memorial Day weekend. And first of all, the real meaning of Memorial Day weekend, for all the people, the men and women that fought to give us what we have today, our freedom. Thank you. Thank you very much. And
yes, thank you for your service.
Yes.
And the Indy 500,
yeah.
Which I read the headline yesterday. Did you guys read? It is a sellout. Completely yep. Sold out. 136,000 people.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to ask,
on.
Is it full capacity? Was it sold out at 50% or sold out at 100%?
Well, 136,000 people
sounds like a lot.
That sounds like
all,
it's
that
full.
Sounds like all the people. That's yeah. Pretty much everyone.
But so, they have social distancing structures in place.
Well, you know what? Let's look at it, guys. Indiana is the one state that had drag racing and had road racing and IndyCar all during the, you know, early on. So I'm sure they've been gearing up.
Did you see pictures at dad's concerts in Florida?
I did.
Yes, I saw
everybody's
in
like in these little corrals. Yeah, they're in these little corrals and they're dancing by themselves.
It was like concert jail, man. It was like, you know, yeah, I'm in jail, but I'm good.
But that right on, weird. You know, you're making it work. Just doing what you got to do. It's awesome.
It still looked like a big capacity, though.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I don't know what percentage, but yeah. 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 Dad just mentioned that it was, you know, restricted. But yeah.
Awesome. I saw him up there with his white pants.
I don't know how he can pull it off, man. I put white pants on. It's like, whoa.
Exactly.
All the mosquitoes, all the gnats, everybody goes right to my white pants. I don't think I've ever owned white pants. I think I had a pair of white sweatpants.
But speaking of Indy 500, I mean, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a better, very entertaining race. The record or whatever, not the record, but sort of what's going on with Simone Di Silvestro. I don't have her name in front of me. I forgot her name. I don't know why. It's just a blank, but she qualified for Indy 500 and almost her entire team are female teams on the pit crew and
awesome.
the GM. And I think they work with Penske. With Roger Penske, who obviously owns the track now as well and has teams out there. And I forgot the woman's name, Beth, who has a big background in racing. She said, hey, let's put together a team. Let's put together mostly a female team. Let's get a driver. Let's see if we can qualify. And he said, I love the idea. I'm going to help do whatever we can. So she and her team got full access to Penske's resources and all of their people. And they said, great, let's start training. And they said, well, you know, your pit stop's got to be like 5 seconds, you know, or like 6 seconds max.
And
when they went in there, yeah, when they went in there, they started training. Like any of us would be like, I don't know how quickly it all happens. And they were, you know, they were 13 seconds and then 12 and then 11 And they got it down to like 5 seconds, and the team is fantastic. And the women working on the team, they were saying it. There's more of both an art and science to it than you think. Like when you, even when you take the wheel off and when you put it back on, it's, it kind of needs to become second nature to you as far as like the exact angle as you're approaching, you know, and that's what makes it sort of slide on, kind of clip on. Like if you just jam it forward, like you're not going to get it. Like you have to get a certain angle and you can't think about it. You have to just kind of hit it again and again, just like, and do it. So that's going to be exciting.
It needs to become
race.
Muscle memory for them.
It really does.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is they have actually people that study the motions and say, well, if you approach it from this angle, you take one less step. And it's, I mean, there's so much to it. It's
that's exactly right. That's what they were talking about. They were
it's all about economy. You know, it's all about economy. Economy of time, movement, you know, accuracy, everything. It's really cool.
They were just talking about working with the team that trains on a regular basis, how often they train to do it, just so it becomes that muscle memory that you're talking about, Brad. And you're right. Every little thing is thought of later going, don't take an extra step here, or, you know, grab with your left hand when your right hand is doing something. Like just every little thing is taken into account. And then you realize,
I bet you breathing is even a factor. Like take a breath here, not here. You know,
I bet it is. And then as you're training, you have to kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, throw a wrench into the system and go, what if this happens? What if this happens?
What if
a wrench does get thrown into the system? You know, and I feel
what if
like
a bird had too many blackberries.
I feel like the highest pressure job is the guy standing there going, don't go, don't go, don't go. Now you can go. Because that's, as soon as you say now you can go, that's a missile getting ready to launch out of there. I mean, I know the pit has a maximum speed, but they spin the tires and they get going. And then you know, when things go poorly, you see people flying over the hoods of cars and over the nose cones and stuff like that. So you can get pretty hurt out there.
Well, just last week, they showed some footage at one of the IndyCar races where the leader came in, and I don't even remember who it was, but I remember seeing the clip, and the guy was putting on, you know, on the outside, putting the wheel back on, and you know, they'll throw the gun. They have a guy that pulls it by the hose.
Yeah.
He got caught on the tire. And the guy that you said, when he saw the guy drop the gun, usually it's drop the gun, it's out of the way by the time he goes like that.
Yeah.
He was still under it, and the car went over it, and it flung it because those tires were spinning and it shot it. Oh. Man, I mean, think of that. Those guns, you know, they use
heavy
titanium and everything, but they're still a
heavy
chunk of metal, you know, and it was, it's crazy. But the, you know what? I want to ask you guys, I don't, maybe I've just been in the wrong place or watching the wrong information feeds, but to me, I don't seem to have seen all the lead up, all the qualifying, heard about it like I used to in the past. I mean, what have you guys seen?
You know, it's a good question. I'm not sure. So I did see some of it, but I was looking for it. Like I've been following, you know, we're good friends with Graham Rahal, good friends with Simon Pagenaud, and I'm rooting for them. You know, so I've been following their stuff as well and kind of getting their social media updates and videos. But you're right. As far as just like news coverage and stuff, I'm not sure that I'm really seeing it. But, you know, the week before they run, whatever, they did testing now, but I think it was a week ago, they ran Indy, the road course, right? And now this is 8500 is the oval, but it was. And so Graham and I have exchanged a few emails as well over the past few weeks. And he had sort of a poor strategy move. It was like the first few laps out. I forgot what happened. They called him in for something. And it put him in last place. Like he was on the grid in fifth. And then 10 laps into it, he's like, what did we do? Why did we just come in? And the guy, you hear the spotter going, Yeah, sorry. We made the wrong calculations. Let us work on it. We're going to try to make up for it. And you can hear Graham a little hot on the radio going, I don't know why we just did this. Like, what's going on? We just started the race. Like, he wasn't mean and he wasn't using profanity. He was just, you could tell he was a little hot.
He was frustrated going, as well.
He was just like, did we just blow the race like a few laps into it? Like, what happened here? It's so funny. I see Pesto's butt walking around back there.
he usually falls asleep in my arms, but he doesn't want to today. So.
I just see his little wiggle butt in the background. We're on the video chat.
Sorry, I have my dog with me. So he's still a puppy, so I can't leave him alone for very long.
And just, you know, talk about a team effort. Like, we, you know, even training for the pit crew, the team went back, strategized, and then said, okay, Graham, this is what we want you to do. We've got, you know, we've got a long way to go. You're going to come in here. You're going to do this. The strategy and his driving worked, went from last place, worked his way up. And I think he finished fifth again, where he started.
Had to work his ass super off to get back to where he started.
Yes. He had to pass 25 people to get back to where he started. But he was able to retain his points, right? Because he's fifth in the points lead right now. And it's not just winning, it's consistent. If you're in the top and you're consistent, that's where you want to be. So it was an interesting race to see and a valiant effort on that team. It's almost like the mistake they made, it's good that they made it at the beginning because then they had the rest of the race to sort of re-strategize and give the benefit at the end, you know, like the extra fuel he had, or like, how do we take advantage of that? Now you're 10 laps in, you have extra fuel. How do we make it so you have that at the end of the race and not have to come in when everybody else does? Right. And that's the difference. Like when everybody else pits, if he doesn't have to, then that's how you jump from 28 to fifth.
Yeah,
you know. Also, you got to be an awesome driver.
you think
that fuel stuff can kill, you know, cars? I remember the year that way back when Robbie Gordon was still driving Indy cars, and my Bonneville Watch Company was one of his sponsors, and we were watching the last laps. One lap to go. Robbie's leading. He's like, he had him like by two car lengths coming around, I think, corner number two, and all of a sudden he starts slowing down and ran out of fuel in number three and coming into the last turn, everybody's going, rah, 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 rah. He ended up like 12th or something. And I was like, I remember already, like, I was already like in my head making the ad, you know, I was going to have a bottle of milk with a waterproof watch sitting in the spilled puddle of milk. I was like, yeah, we won the Indy 500. And it was like, what just happened? Oh, he ran out of fuel.
Ran out of fuel.
That kind of stuff.
And then Why he ran out of fuel? Because Brad's cheap.
That's right.
I couldn't afford the extra fuel, damn it. Sponsorship money only went so far.
Bonneville Watches, the watch of 12th place.
Exactly. I was going to do an ad that said, Bonneville Watches, we almost won the Indy 500.
Yeah. Yeah. We ran out of time. I got Brad jokes.
Brad jokes.
All right, what else is going on?
Hey, did you see that Rolls-Royce announced that they now hold the position for the world's most expensive new car?
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Is it the boat tail?
Not Koenigsegg or something?
The boat tail. And this thing is ridiculously priced.
All right. I'm pulling this up.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually quite pretty for what it is. I mean, they did a really good job.
They
spent thousands of man hours on pulling this off. So Rolls-Royce, quite a few car companies, for those of you that you don't know, quite a few car companies, especially Rolls-Royce, will do bespoke cars. You can go to them and say, hey, I've got this idea for, you know, take your sedan. I want to make it a coupe, or, you know, Ferrari's done a few over the years. Didn't they do one for Eric Clapton? They took
they did years
like a 488 or 430, like a 4 or 360, and they made, Yeah, that one was kind of weird looking, by the way.
Yeah, but I mean, these Rolls-Royce are really going back to like the 20s and 30s when, yeah, you know, coach built cars, where you bought a chassis from someone, you bought a motor, and then a bodybuilder would build these. And we're not talking about a bodybuilder, like a, you know,
I got you.
A big muscly guy. No, a coach guy that builder would actually bend the metal or whatever. And boat tail cars back then, they quite literally were boats. The auto manufacturers would take the hull of like these wooden speedboats and use that, cut them off, make a metal hood and a windshield and everything. And people, and they became known as boat tail speedsters because they could get the aerodynamic effects of these older boats. Now, today they're not using those as far as I know. Now, you know, I don't think Rolls Royce, but the boat tail, the, you know, is really interesting. But
so this thing's a roadster only, or is there a coupe version?
No, it's a top. It has a top.
It has a convertible top, a soft top.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, now, you should find the picture of the convertible
top. Sorry, not a roadster, a convertible. Right.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's a convertible.
Yeah, it's kind of trippy. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Now, the one thing that's interesting, and we'll kind of lead up to how much this car is, but they had the swept tail cars that previously held the position, are you guys ready? At $12.8 million each. Hmm. And this car exceeds and eclipses that. Now, you think of like the Bugatti at $9.7 million. You know, we're talking a car that they've sold three of, all custom built to order, and it exceeds $12.8 million by quite a bit. But now you guys have both seen the photos. It is a good looking car. It's almost 20 feet long. So it's a monster.
Well, the Woody's 18.6. Well, what's 20 feet?
Yeah, what's 20 feet?
That's a little more
average new car garage.
So wait, what was the price? Where did it come in at? Do we know?
This car came in at, now they do not disclose what their, you know, their coach built cars go for. But they said someone out of Rolls-Royce said, renaming nameless, $28 million.
Jeez.
For a That's single just silly. Car.
That's Do we know just... who the client was? Who's the buyer?
They have not said. They said they have three of them sold, one delivered. And there was a rumor that one of them is $36 million. I don't even know how you can put $36 million into a single car.
Because it's covered in jewels and gold and shit.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, how would you make it, you know, $36 million? Because, you know, you can hand build a car. I understand the difference is that these cars have to meet all of their new car specifications. So if they change one thing, they've got to reconfigure all the airbag, you know, all of the crash testing, everything like that. But it's pretty amazing that the car, it's pretty amazing somebody'd spend that much. Let's put it that way.
But they've got to do something so they don't have to crash test it, right? They have to say, hey, we can only change a certain amount of things. Like, we can't change the A pillars and some things on the front and, you know, like sheet metal and whatever. Like, it, otherwise you'd have to make a few of them just to crash them.
Exactly. And I don't believe because they are a one-off built based on another that you're right there, but there's certain things that they're, but there's, you know, ridiculousness. I mean, if you've seen the photos of the little stools that come out of the boot and there's a little umbrella that, you know, you can sit under and have a picnic and you know,
that's what my first thought
is, anybody who has this car, I don't see them having a picnic, you know.
I love that
in the middle of
the
desert
cars.
In Dubai.
Right. Yeah. I love that the high-end cars come with champagne and champagne flutes. Like, pretty much the one thing you can't do while driving the car is, so you have to go to the trunk to get your champagne flute. You know, it's It's interesting that this came out, Brad, as the most expensive car, because it wasn't just a couple of weeks ago, the beginning of May, I think, was it May? There was another Bugatti that was like $12.5 million.
Right.
Jeez. That's just crazy.
That was the most expensive one. But I think there's a new Bugatti that's somewhere. It's based on the Chiron.
I can never pronounce it.
No, you're thinking of Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
they Bugatti do Chiron. Show on some of the websites, they are showing an extensive amount of photography on these. And they are showing some of the, I mean, entire car in clay, which is interesting because so much of that is done now CNC clay, but they show the guys doing the clay work and then hand bending the metal. And yeah. So that's a lot of money. We know that. However, we also know that some of the people we are friends with that restore vintage Ferraris and build one-off aluminum bodied and steel bodied cars, and they don't even get anywhere near those prices, you know? Uh-huh. So it's quite amazing.
Right. But prices are climbing. That's for sure.
Prices are climbing on everything.
I gotta tell you, like, as
specialized labor, you know,
as you know, we've talked about the Rolls Royce. We've driven a few of the Rolls Royces. Mm-hmm. We've done some road trips and stuff on them. Really just one of the nicest driving cars. They're the magic incredible. Carpet ride. It's just, you know, you look at this car. This thing actually is pretty cool. This thing is.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Oh, heck yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's an art piece. Like this will end up in a museum at some point. You know, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure maybe the owner intended on driving it a little bit, but somewhere down the road, I see this in like a Peterson or Mullen Museum, obviously a private collection for a while, but it should be on display someplace in a museum.
It'll probably show up on abandoned cars in the Middle East.com.
Yeah, because they couldn't get the hood. They
just parked
the
alongside the road
sandstorm.
With the... It'll have the parasol up, and it'll all be shredded, and crows sitting on top. And
you know. I have crows.
I tell you, like wherever the price came in, because there's rumors at 10 million, some say 20 million, some say 20 million pounds, which would put it at well over $20 million. Yes. I would just be like, at this price, I want a lifetime warranty. Lifetime warranty.
They go, well, that would be an absolutely. Additional 10 million.
And a lifetime supply of the champagne in the trunk.
Yeah.
I mean.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but this is kind of funny. So Pesto's barking, mm-hmm. right? Where is he? He's barking at the child.
Oh, at the baby Yoda?
So he's not quite sure what it is. So if you hear barking in the background.
So what you're telling us, Aaron, is your dog's not potty trained?
Yeah, right.
Because we're doing a podcast here. He's not potty trained.
Jeez, Brad's got Brad jokes.
those are my old man Brad jokes. Your dog's not potty trained.
I'll tell my wife she cannot say yes to Fridays. Pesto, shh. It's just a little creature, okay? There.
It's covered.
Let's see if that helps. And he knocked the mirror down earlier. That was the big crash you heard.
No. But back to the Rolls Royce. The thing is that we've always seen these cars, and you're absolutely right. If this, you know, 20 years from now, people will go to a museum, and just like the ones at the Peterson Museum now or at the, you know, the Mullen Museum or wherever, where you see these cars and, oh, it belonged to the Maharaja of India or something like that. And, you know, they're just, you go, wow, look at that thing. Somebody actually ordered that wicker Rolls Royce, you know, or, you know, the crazy things they've done over the years.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Piece. So you know, if you're into that kind of thing, if you're into that.
You know what? when my cryptocurrency pays off big, I won't be buying anything like that with it. Okay.
Well, speaking of wicker, I'll just stick to a fiat jolly, you know.
Yeah. Which are going through the roof now too. So
I know they're getting Rolls Royce prices now.
Yeah. So, speaking of people that take their Rolls Royces off road, you went on an overlanding trip, Aaron. And didn't you take your new Bentley?
Yes. It is British, and it isn't Rolls. It isn't as posh or as
it does roll.
Yeah, it's capable. Yeah. So I went out with Wildwood Expeditions, and it was kind of a beta run to see on a trip that they're going to offer later on. And we did some conservation stuff. We went out there with a bunch of really awesome, intelligent people. I mean, I felt like a total dummy because I'd say half of the group had at least one master's degree. I mean, I was like, wow, these people are awesome. Very empowered women who had a lot to say about a lot of things. It was really interesting. We had a geologist, a naturalist. I mean, we had all kinds of really interesting people, and it was really neat. So we were out in the playa near where Burning Man is in Black Rock. We started in Gerlach, and it was about 3 hours from me in the deep in kind of the central Nevada desert, I think. Really pretty. I'm not as much of a desert guy. I don't care for the dust and the heat, and I'm more of a forest and coastal guy. But it was cool. I love geology, so the geology out there was really, really neat. And I thought I hadn't been to the playa, but when I looked at my Gaia maps, we actually had crossed part of it on my last big trip last year with some folks. So, but this was like started off on the 12th exit and ran straight across to Black Rock, and then exited at the hot springs there, and then just trekked through the hills and the canyons for 3 days. It was
how long was the trip? Just 3 days for the whole
3 days? Yeah, it was.
But like
was,
when?
Well, 4 days for me because I
had to get out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I drove. I went out there a day early and stayed over with the gentleman that put on the trip, Jeff, and another couple. But it was really, really cool. We
you
got
took
some
the
weather.
Defender.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So I took my D110 Defender. And
remind us what year that is.
So, well, it's complicated, but it's basically a 93/94/99.
And then tell us how you've outfitted it, because not a lot of people know.
I did some partnerships with Free Spirit and a few other folks. I'm going to forget everybody right now. I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, it was a big build. It's a premium build. There's nothing on that thing that's junk. Everything is premium. And it's like Front Runner and Baja Designs. I mean, some really, really worn, obviously. Some really top-notch stuff. And it's awesome, man. It performed flawlessly. One of my zippers went bad on the tent, which I just crimped back. It was just loose, and that was it. I mean, literally, the thing performed flawlessly, and it was awesome. We did deep water crossings that were probably, over the tires and creeping up on the doors. I had some water in the truck, but it was really, really cool. And
Aaron, no
mishaps.
I thought we talked about that before you went, that
what?
After the first night, you can't leave the tent up. You have to take it down and pack back up because the zippers will fail.
Yeah. Well, we have really high winds. You get a lot of winds at the playa. So we had some pretty dramatic winds, and it was neat because we were surrounded by storms. So in like all four corners, north, south, east, west, you can see these huge microcells, just microcells. I know it's kind of conflict there, but yeah, you could see these weather systems in the corners, and it was pretty neat. And we'd be just, wind would go one direction, and then half an hour later, it would be doing 40 miles per hour in the other direction. It was really neat. I love that shit. That's adventure to me is, okay, let's make this work. And that was actually my best night sleeping on that rooftop tent. It's a clamshell tent. So it's a semi hard shell tent. And, I loved it. I love when stuff rattles and shakes and you hear the wind and you can't tell if it's wind or rain beating against the door. I mean, I'm a total glutton for that. So I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. I went solo.
How did your handmade hand bedliner cubby hole hold up? We talked about that last time.
Actually, pretty well. In fact, I did get high centered on the first water crossing because I took it slow. A couple people really blazed through it, and I think the hydroplaned over whatever was blocking it. But I went slow, and I just ran into whatever was under there, a couple feet under there. And I actually had to climb out of my rig on the side rails and the rooftop, open the back, slide that drawer out one-handed while you know monkeying off the rear ladder to pull out my waders because it was almost waist deep. And so I pulled out my waders, put them onto the back of the truck, went around to the side of the truck and grabbed my rear shackle to be pulled out from the rear. So I put it in the hitch and everything was right there. So all my pre-planning and design that people tease me and laugh about and go, I'm telling you, it's like everything was one hand, you know, one action. Open a door, there it is. Open a drawer, there it is. That's the kind of the whole point is that economy of movement and that 1 to 2 step action to be able to get to something efficiently and under those conditions. I'm underwater and I never got wet and I was able to wade through and hook up the shackle and get towed out and didn't trouble anybody else to get wet, which was awesome. So.
Now, he wasn't really stuck. He actually could have driven out, but he wanted to show that all of his stuff worked.
Well, it was good because you don't get to do recovery too often, thankfully. And this was kind of a good test with the beta group to kind of do it. And I got pulled out in the way I came in because obviously I was stuck on something. I was stuck so hard that my front wheel stopped turning. And that's a full-time four-wheel drive with a center lock differential. So that central lock system was so bound that it disconnected and just ran it to the rear. So I was really in there. I didn't want to do any damage, and
now
I didn't.
You posted a photo. You said it was a 3-foot drop, and you saw the guy in front of you kind of like don't disappear.
It was probably more like a 4 or maybe even 5 foot drop. That thing was gnarly. When you really couldn't tell by the video, but it was. I got to say, that was probably the most nervous moment I had was, you know, just driving over a cliff, basically down into the water. But the Rover cleared it by about an inch on the front and just barely tipped that little because I left that hitch pull in there. So just barely grazed that because it sticks out a little bit. But yeah, that was a surprise. There was some good stuff on that trip. I got to say, Jeff and the team really, really did a good job planning and designing the trail. You know, for us, it was good.
What were some of the other vehicles that you were out there with?
So there was another D110. I think there was a 90. It's 92. I think it is right hand drive 300 TD diesel. And that was Jeff's, and that's actually how we met. You know, Defender people. And then there was a big 4x4 van, which was lifted. That. Yeah, it had a V10. Everybody's like, is that a diesel? I'm like, I thought it was a diesel too. V10, really nice. A gentleman in there. There was 2 FJs, I think a 60 and a 65. So round eye and a square eye headlight. Those were awesome rigs, and those guys were hardcore. They were both like certified, you know, they're serious people and safety people, and they were great. And then there was there was a stock, I think a Nissan Xterra bone stock. So that slowed things down. But it was also really cool because it showed that you could take pretty much a bone stock off the shelf SUV and run through some pretty hardcore stuff that we were running. She slid on the side rails pretty hard and bumped it up a little bit, but she was able to take it through. Let's see what else. There was a Toyota pickup and, you know, the Toyota pickups are pretty much, you know, flawless. And then there was something else. I'm forgetting. There was eight vehicles total. So, anyway, a good variety of vehicles and a really cool group of people, and everybody pitched in. And it's always a nice community, you know, that they're all adults, but you bring your kids. It's more family oriented, although I didn't have mine with me this time. But it's cool. We all wake up. We cook breakfast together and share breakfast. We share dinner, you know,
it's nice, you know, but the High Rock Canyon, where that deep water crossing was probably the highlight to me, because it kind of clicked all the boxes. There's so much history. It's all along the Emigrant Trail. So if you look at the history of the Emigrant Trail, there's some really, really, really neat history of that trail. And we ran parallel to it most of the time. So if you look up that trail.
You talked about the storm cells and like that, but what was the temperature? Because it seems like it'd be a good time of year to go, because before it starts getting too hot, cold.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, on the playa, it just feels hot. So even though it's like 86 degrees, it feels like 900 because of that reflection. And you're just out in the open. And the slightest breeze was like, oh, yes, it's 4 degrees cooler. You know, I can't imagine doing that mid-season in the summer or something and have it be 100.
I don't know if that's a weird question, but does your truck have air in it?
Yes. So okay. But mine's full spec, so it's got AC.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so there was only I think Jeff's old Defender is the only one that didn't have AC. I think everybody else had AC. Maybe the FJ, but I think they had AC too. But yeah, what a difference. Although that little scoop that hangs off the fender, that's the air intake for the air inside and heater. And so I couldn't really use the AC because basically the whole cabin would fill with dust.
Well, plus, when
there
you're
is
doing that,
so much dust on the planet.
When you're out overlanding and you're going through creeks, going off drops, a lot of the time you're hanging out the window anyway, checking the terrain, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we had spotters, so I actually had the AC on, but and the spotters were good. I was number four in line every day. We had kind of a set structure for the lineup, so I was number four, and so I had three vehicles in front of me, including one similar to mine, to kind of gauge what was going on. And
you gotta
our
see
pumpkin,
the line.
Exactly. Yeah. And our pumpkins are a little in a different place than some of the other, you know, some are centered, some are left, some are right.
Yeah.
Ours are kind of center right. So, you know, when Jeff went through, he's like, Aaron, you know, stay to your left and put your pumpkin here. And he'd point and, you know, so it was nice because, he'd bang first.
Well,
but it's great.
Something.
That's all adventure, you know?
Jeff was the organizer, you said, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Did he pre-run this?
Yes. So he and a couple other folks, I think, pre-ran it. Okay. It's a pretty known trail, so it's not like we were beating trails. This was a conservation trip, so we're also doing trail maintenance and cleanup and such, which is just good manners when you're out there anyway. So he pre-ran the route. You know, they're real hardcore map people. Jeff is really, really wonderfully organized and did a stellar job with this trip.
How do you do it? Like, is it open to other people?
It will be. So Wildwood, it's the Wildwood Open Lands Foundation. So it's a charitable cause, and he'll have it available as one of the trips real soon. He's building an organization to do expeditions, either locally or I'm sure outside as well.
So then you pay for this, like you pay.
Eventually you will, but it's charity. It's all charity. It's just for the adventure, you know, but.
Right. You know, you get a fun adventure out of it and maybe donate something.
Cause I got to say, you know, that's my biggest thing with all these trips is I have all these places I want to go and do it off road, but you really need to plan your off road trip because you can't just, I mean, you can, but it depends how capable your vehicle is and how much supplies you have. But if, you know, if someone like me has a breakage out there, if I break an axle or something, I either have to wait for someone with a welder because I'm sure as hell not going to wait for someone with a spare part. but if you're in a Toyota or something that's a little more, you know, a friendly out there and common, an old Jeep, you know, or a new Jeep, some of them might have some spare. So it's desolate. It's out in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, you definitely want to plan your routes. You want to let people know where you're going on those routes. We all had GPS and nav systems. We all had InReach systems. We all have Life Flight. It was part of the prep. We did a couple Zoom meetings. I mean, this was a really organized and intelligent group. It was like doing a full-on expedition, but it was just this fun little trip. Pardon?
What's Life Flight?
A helicopter. So basically, our inReach systems are our satellite GPS. So it's like having a satellite phone. You can text through them. And if you get in trouble, you can just hit SOS and they send me in the infantry, you know.
Talking about like life flight.
You can get hurt out there, man. You can roll over and get hurt. You can get snake bit and get hurt. There's lots of rattlesnakes out there. The scorpions aren't so dangerous unless you're allergic to bees and such. Then you can have an anaphylactic reaction. They had EpiPens. You know, we had like full-on EMTs out there. So,
curious. Is awesome. Basically this insurance program, this helicopter that comes, is it part of it like an insurance program? Or do you know it's going to cost a lot of money when you hit that button?
Yeah,
so you're like, is my leg really worth it? Or
both? InReach is part of the Garmin system, and they have their own insurance, which I got. But this is another one. So what happens up here in Tahoe is, let's say I have a heart attack. Barton here is mostly joint related stuff. No pun intended. You know, if there's a heart thing, they're going to run you down to Reno, and they almost always life flight you. So you jump on a helicopter and now you can add $30,000 plus to your bill.
Oh yeah.
But if you have that life flight insurance, then it's taken care of. So, or substantially less. So it's a real good thing to have in rural areas.
I wasn't aware of it. It's a good program.
Yeah. It really is. It's like $100 a year, $78 a year. So it's really affordable. Covers a whole household and definitely worth it.
Well, I got the discounted one. It only counts me. If something happens to Charlotte,
she's
just going to take the ambulance. I can't.
Right. You just put a beard on her.
Yeah. I was going to say, Charlotte put a name tag. Brad. Where's Brad? I'm Brad.
I'm Brad. Yeah. I'm Brad.
Says it on my name tag. I'm Brad.
He has a girly voice anyway. Yeah. But it was spectacular. I'd tell anybody, you know, go find a trail, find a group and explore your backyard. Cause it's awesome. Whether it's on a bike or a boat or, you know, a truck, or go for it, man. I'm still buzzing about it. What, it's been 2 or 3 weeks and I'm still like trying not to post too much.
Yeah, that's good.
A word from our friends at Geico. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
You know, did you come across other people out on the trail or out in the wilderness?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's many people out doing, it seems like everybody I talk to, I'm getting a truck. I'm going to start overlanding. Oh, I'm going up.
Yeah. My wife
and I are going camping and we're just going to go down some trail. It's going to be to the point where the cities are desolate and out there.
Totally.
I wouldn't mind here.
I wouldn't mind it either.
So part of the challenge is that part of the challenge in conserving these trails, the Rubicon, for example, is getting trampled on so much these past years and by vehicles that normally hasn't seen, like a lot of side by sides. And, you know, the side by sides are a completely different type of vehicle and dynamic.
They tear up a lot more
with a lot of wheel spin and a lot of horsepower and a lot of articulation. And they get out there and most of us overlanders are going slow. We're in first and second gear in low. These guys, I think, are into the speed. I can't tell you how many comments on my Instagram were, you know, gas it. You know, it's like, guys, wrong group. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot, and they'll take trails that aren't marked. So they'll get off trail. And, you know, I got to say, I didn't know about the ecosystem out there. And that was really, really not necessarily eye-opening, but really interesting for me to hear that these little lumps that you see in the dirt, that's actually a type of cryptoalgae, and it only blossoms, you know, once every 7 years when they get a certain amount of water or a certain type of, you know, there's all this very fragile ecosystem. You know, that plant takes, you know, 22 years to regrow or it kills off part, another one kills off part of itself so it can survive in the drought. And, you know, the ecosystem is so dialed in and it's so fragile that, you know, if we don't tread lightly, you know, we do a lot of damage, and it's very interesting. So the playa, they call it the playa, the Black Rock ecosystem, is really interesting. And it was really cool to be out there with some really, really educated people who were definitely conservationists. I mean, I actually got in trouble for getting off trail a little bit when I got high centered. When I retook it, I got in the reeds just, I mean, minimally. And the gentleman from one of the magazines who was with us really got upset, and I felt terrible. I wasn't the first one, but I started the pack, and then. And then everybody read. Yeah, I got to say it killed the vibe for me for the rest of the day. I really took it personally, and I was definitely the one being pointed at. But, you know, I was with a very conservative group, and I consider myself a tread lightly guy. But I wasn't going to, you know, I wasn't going to tear up a couple $100,000 vehicle. And so I tried to just get over as little as I could off the ruts. And by doing that, I got over a couple reads, and it made this person very upset. So, it, you know, we were with a very sensitive group, and it shows you just how passionate they are about preserving this. So when someone in the group who's there to tread lightly does something like that, it's really offensive. So it was a big lesson.
You need to learn because you're new with the group, you know, be informative, critical, and you'll know.
And that's part of it too, really learning.
I have a great question that, how much extra fuel did you take?
So I took 10 gallons, but I have to say none of us even got near having to get fuel at the end of the day. So at the end of the 3 days being out there, I still had half a tank. You're just motoring very slow and not throttling aggressively. So you're just kind of cruising and maneuvering and, you know, with an efficient vehicle, but the rover gets in the 20s.
Have to take into consideration that
absolutely,
if something did happen, let's say you got stuck and separated from your group, and there was a nuclear explosion while you were out there, and you were the last ones left on Earth. That you might need that 10 gallons and value it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is, you know, accidents happen. So I was in the Pinzgauer and I did the Rubicon, and I ruptured my fuel tank and I was losing fuel. And someone came along.
I was just going to say, hopefully that tread lightly guy wasn't out there.
There's a flame trail behind me. It was quite pretty, really.
He was like, going, oh my God, there's Aaron every time we bring him.
but the Pinzgauer gets like, you know, 6 or 8 miles per gallon. It's pitiful. Yeah. And it's got a small tank. It's barely 10 gallons, I think 10 or 11 gallons. So when you start losing fuel out of the bottom of that tank, it's pretty serious. And I definitely had fuel anxiety and range anxiety most of the time. And a gentleman came up and broke his bar of soap in half, rubbed it on the tank, end of the drip, and left me with half a bar of soap. And he said, always carry a bar of soap on the trail. They prefer Irish Spring. So I still have it.
Shower.
I still have it in all my rigs. I have half a bar or a little sliver of soap. There's something about the soap compound, which will plug a light crack or hole or tear. Not, I wouldn't even say tear.
Kind of using it like a wax.
Yes, exactly.
Like a hard kind of wax,
but, it's chemical resistant. I wouldn't shower with it, but damn, I'll take some on the trail.
Well, I usually shower with unleaded. You know, that's how I usually.
I'm a diesel guy.
Yeah. It's so greasy, though, for me, the diesel. So
Next time I get a big cut, I'm just going to take a bar of soap and kind of rub it over.
There you go. But yeah, there's all this cool stuff to learn. And I love traveling with people who are very experienced because you always learn something, you know. Fueling wasn't an issue, you know, as long as you just plan it. It was good to go. But I think we are all quietly carrying. I was carrying as well. Nevada
in the middle of nowhere, you have to.
Nevada is an open carry, but there's not much threat out there, really.
Crazy guy who wants to take your car.
Yeah, but man, he'd have to carry a lot of fuel. Now, you know, snakes are an issue. I'm sure there's some wildlife. We didn't see too much wildlife. We saw wild horses, which was fun. You always see the Mustangs running out there, and they are pretty cool because they'll run alongside the vehicles along the road. You kind of got to watch them because they'll just cross over suddenly. They're waiting for a gap.
All the Mustangs do that. Eventually, they hit the crowd.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's good, that crash in front of you. You're out of control.
But you'll see them bucking and rearing out there, and it's really pretty. But
they do that inside of every car show.
That was good, Matt. Good one. Matt's on. He had his energy drink this morning.
I did have a sip of that when I came in. Well, Friday mornings I do another, not a podcast. I have a standing meeting, phone call meeting early in the morning. So Fridays I get up early. it sounds like a great trip.
And yeah,
I keep saying on the shows, like, overlanding's not really my thing. I mean, there's a level of interest, but also just the lack of experience is like, I'm just going to be that newbie out there. But these stories help a lot. It certainly gets me interested in, you know, like, now what you're talking about is, you know, just the prep for it and finding the right group and going out with some pretty experienced people that, you know, even something like this, which is, you know, everybody's so accommodating because there's a charity involved. And, you know, it's kind of like some of the, you know, the track days that we've all done. There's everybody gets invited out and, you know, all the cars that are fast get a certain sticker and they do their group and the slower guys do their group. But everybody in the pits are kind of like, hey, that was great. That was great.
Yeah.
Here's some thoughts. Mm-hmm. Would you like to ride with me? I'll show you a line or something like that. So I kind of like that part of it. And the overlanding aspect, I forgot that's the way car guys are.
You know, it's in my head,
I'm
like,
I'm going to be out there. What's going on? I was like, there's always going to be the guys going, let me show you how to do this. And here's a line. And can I help? Or, you know, whatever. And then I'd be the guy that say, I've got AC in my car. If anybody wants to just sit in here for a minute.
I did offer a couple times, but everybody else seemed to be well equipped as well.
Yeah, everyone's like, no, we got that.
And this isn't glamping, you know, that this is just having the right equipment for the passion. You know, if you're a track junkie, eventually you're going to get a track dedicated car and or bike or whatever you're riding or driving. And you're going to trailer it there because if something happens, hey, throw it back on the trailer and you get home. You know, you might camp at the racetrack the night before, or you might stay in a motel, but you're going to have good equipment. You're going to have good safety equipment. You're going to have maybe some cooling equipment for a hot day. You know, you're going to be equipped. So what is that? Is that glamping, you know, race day, track day? You know, it's just a passion for what you do, and it's being equipped. I want my family to have a nice experience, and I want them to want to do it. And I don't have any prissy people in my family, thankfully. So everybody participates. You know, my daughter sleeps in the truck. My son will sleep in the truck or outside in a tent or in a hammock if it's nice out. You know, everybody digs in. So you know, I love Land Rovers. I'm a Land Rover guy. So I was able to get this rig at a very affordable price considering what it is. And So I bought in during COVID and built it out to be my dream rig and outfitted it with great stuff because there's great information out there and there's great products out there. And we have a great, great, great time. One of my favorite camping products I have is a jet boil. I don't care what you put in it. It's like a couple minutes. It'll boil, you know, a quart of water like that. And we're set up and we're going and we're eating or drinking tea or coffee in the morning, or, you know, it's like you just
find that's so fancy. That's the Ritz-Carlton of boiling water.
yeah. But then again, you're talking about the economy of time, the efficiency of everything. And when you're setting up camp, you don't want to be spending an hour setting up camp and an hour and a half breaking it down or vice versa. So I've got about a 7 minute camp ready and about a 10 minute camp teardown. And literally myself, and it's pretty impressive. And I use it more often. I'll open the canopy more often. I'll open the awning more often. I'll pop the tent up, you know, if I want to take a nap, because it's 1 minute up and 3 minutes down. It's pretty awesome, you know, and that just makes the experience better, I think. Not to say, you know, going out with a backpack and sleeping bag isn't the best thing ever, because it is. If you choose to go out with your family, you know, everybody's taken care of and everybody's happy, and we can share and be efficient and spend more time relaxing than setting up and tearing down, especially in the weather, especially when it gets windy or rainy or stuff. You know, that's hell trying to fiddle with things and the wind and rain.
Will your environmental guy frown on it if I came along and
we lost Brad.
Oh, Brad froze.
You lost.
Yes, he did frown, Brad, and he actually left the group. he was a little irritated.
Now we lost Aaron.
Take a screenshot of Brad's face right now.
I'm the only one. So, all right, that's it. The show is over. Everybody, follow us on shiftandsteer.com. And go to iTunes and find us there, because I'm
rapping. Hey, there he is.
No, that's it. We're done, man. I just started wrapping things up. I was going to ask you, your environment.
You were frozen. You came out.
You were frozen the whole time. Yeah, we got a screenshot of you doing that.
Yeah.
But
so would your environmental guy frown on, oh, are we losing it again? Would he frown at dusk? I had a jet-propelled helicopter pick me up, take me to the Four Seasons, and bring me back in the morning?
Probably.
Watch out for the horses. And we popped down the tree that was in the way. Don't worry about that.
So, I don't want to point fingers. I don't know what else was going on around the situation. But, you know, he didn't seem to be having a good time. So,
hey, everybody.
More power to him. I hope things improve.
Overlanding, I'm sure Aaron's going to take some more trips. I'm sure there's going to be cars that will
up the
ante on the world's most expensive new car. And I am sure that we will have some results and some information from the Indy 500 coming up. And I can guarantee you this, that on the next episode, Matt will mention something about a Ford. So.
And Brad, I want to hear the updates on the bikes. And did you talk about it on the last show that
on
I
the
missed?
Bike next week, I'll give it to you. It'll probably be that it's sitting there while I get my upper mezzanine done. Okay, I'll tell you something really quick. Matt, we were talking about my stairway, right?
Yeah. And
it just so happens that a guy down the street, he built this building down there, or build out in his building, about $500,000 build out. It was beautiful.
Wow.
Upper levels. These incredible fabricated metal staircases. And I noticed about 2 weeks ago, the building's empty. I'm like, the signs are taken down. And then on Monday of this week, there's a demo crew there. And they are, I mean, this build out was done maybe 2 years ago. They've got a Bobcat in there and they're literally driving it through the place.
Oh my God.
Tearing it down, gutting the building to a warehouse. They're even taking the front reception office out. So I like, hop out of my car, get out. And I go,
yeah.
Hey, supervisor. And the supervisor, I go, hey, when you guys did this, there were these fabricated stairways in there. And the guy goes, yeah, that's the one thing the guy told us to keep. Putting them in some other building. I'm like, damn it.
Oh.
I was like, because I had measured them at one time when he had them out alongside the building when they were just delivered. And I was like, oh, that'd be perfect for, you know, so I kind of took some pictures and stuff. And I go, I'll style mine around that. I thought, man, if I could just buy those, that would be so awesome.
Yeah.
still going to have
a good thought.
What's that?
It was a good thought, because that's the everything that has to be to spec and OSHA and blah, blah, blah. Like, if you got it done, it's done.
Yeah.
But
sorry, anyway, these were already permitted. I'm just moving them.
Yeah.
Just leave the permits attached, in theory.
Yeah.
Matt, where can they find us online, buddy?
How about shiftandsteer.com?
That's a correct
answer. Sounds good.
It's always been a good place.
Sounds good. Sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah.
How about iTunes?
Follow me at Motor Raider. Of course, you can listen to us on iTunes, as you probably are.
And,
we appreciate the good ratings. I've been driving the Audi RS Q8. I posted some photos of that. And then I swapped it for the RS6 Avant, the wagon.
Ooh, damn.
It is a fast wagon. It's
that is a fast wagon.
Matt, you're killing it right now. I got to say, I'm a bit jealous.
Yeah, it's nice. I'll send you some pictures. I'll post them up on my social media. What's up with you guys?
Aaron, you can find Aaron at Pesto Blood Dog.
I was going to say, I'm recovering from my second COVID shot. Kick my ass.
Yeah. Our guy in the garage, Sean, his second COVID one too.
It put me down a day. Put me down a day. I was like,
put me down 4 days.
That's because you're wimpy. That's because you're eating.
I don't know if altitude has something to do with it. I don't know.
No, Sean brought up a good point. Sean talked to his doctors and they said, if you're feeling it and you're down, you have a strong immune system because that's your body trying to fight it. If you don't feel anything at all, you're probably 85 and don't have that much of an immune system to begin with. That was just sort of his sort of thought on it.
That's not good. I kind of heard the opposite. If you get it bad now, you can kind of expect how you're going to get it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I got my shot, came home, and I was like, nothing. I was sitting in my chair. It was a Friday night. And I was sitting in my chair watching TV. I was going, what are all these people talking about? And then it was like an hour later, I started going, I'm not feeling so good. I woke up the next morning and man.
Right.
I stayed in bed all day. I've never done that. Yep. And it took about another. And then all of a sudden it was like 3 o'clock the next day. I was feeling bad. And then all of a sudden I went, hey, wait a minute. I don't feel bad anymore. It just went away. Yeah.
That's how I felt too. And then once the evening came, at one point I went to go upstairs to go to bed and I thought, shit, I should have went to bed 2 hours ago because I can barely walk up the stairs. Yeah. I could barely lift my arms. That's day three.
A lot of fatigue, but anyway,
a lot of fatigue, but
everybody's
good.
Doing well now. So
we're all done.
I want to see pictures of more of the overlanding pictures and stuff and the other rigs and your stuff now that I'm
interested. And Matt, you know, this is not an empty offer. If you want to experience something lightweight, come on up and we'll just, hell, I can drive 8 miles and it'll feel like you're in another planet,
Yeah. Right.
We'll spend the night and you can, Misha and Finn would love that,
Well,
bring your girl and the pups and,
we have
to get a Ram TRX on the way.
Yeah, I've got plenty of rigs. We'll put you in the Pinsgauer, the Jeep, or the Cherokee if you want. I mean, there's lots of options. So we've got plenty of gear. Just show up. Seriously, just show up. Brad, obviously, you too. So
I was wondering. I thought maybe you were just like,
And no, you didn't really show any interest.
I love all that. Remember when I went out and did my whole trek by myself out to never mind. We'll talk about it.
An episode out of it. You guys come up.
I was going to say, we need to find a sponsor. Seriously, we should talk about this. No, I'm serious. Yeah. Find a sponsor and build two overlanding vehicles out of things that you don't think of as overlanding vehicles.
like a Miata?
Maybe, how they make overlanding Porsches and stuff. Maybe.
Yeah, but Brad, the Gambler 500 folks have pretty much made off-road vehicles out of everything.
I know, but that's a select group. We should do something like that and then go out and have some fun.
Because
you could build them for nothing. You could build them for nothing.
Sure about that.
No. The kind of thing
you'll build them for nothing and they'll fall apart.
They break down out there. We sign the title over to the next guy behind us and go, see ya.
It's your problem.
Hey, guys. Yeah. Hey, this has been Shift and Stare. We'll be back next week with more craziness, more ideas, more laughs, more pesto.
More stuff.
See ya, pal.
Oh, Matt's in a disco. Woo-hoo.
You like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.